Skilled workers are in short supply in Australia, but our training system isn't keeping up with demand. Despite a strong job market, over half of the people who start training don't complete their apprenticeship or traineeship. Low training wages are largely to blame, according to the government task force, which reported this week, and they say Fair Work Australia should review wages and conditions. Later we're going to speak to a newly qualified chef, but first to Dr. Alan Montague. He's a lecturer in the School of Management at RMIT and previously manager of RMIT's apprenticeship and traineeship programs. Hello there, Alan. Welcome to Life Matters.
Good morning, Angela.
Well, that's not good, is it? Less than half of the people who start don't finish their training. What's the main reason for this? Is it poor wages?
I think it is. I think that the salary factor is a big issue. Look, there's other residual issues. Some workplaces, more appropriate behaviours by managers should occur, but I think that the salary is the major driver.
What do you mean by more appropriate behaviour by managers?
I've had many instances where people have left apprenticeships because of bullying in workplaces. They become notable in your mind. They're in the vast minority, but I would suggest that appropriate behaviour should be conducted by anybody in any workplace to make sure that it's a safe and pleasant environment so that people complete. I think that there are some male bastions in the field where this has occurred, but I don't think that it's a major problem. But I think that I would say that there has been some concerns that I've had over the years with that.
I see. I can't imagine that an apprentice or a trainee is coming from a very strong position to stand up to that kind of treatment.
There's elements of strengths within it. They are on an actual training contract where obligations are set out, but often these things aren't subscribed to. But getting back to the real issue, I think that the salary is far too low. I mean, when you look at the data, many of these people are doing apprenticeships and traineeships are actually eligible for AB study or AUS study or some other allowance. From Centrelink, for example. Now, when people are working, you'd think that it should be a little bit beyond that, so they need this top-up, and I think that's a great concern.
Mm. So should employers pay more? Can employers pay more? Or do you think the federal government needs to increase wage subsidies to employers?
Well, if I were the Minister for Tertiary Education, the first thing that I'd do is I'd start to sort of say, what's a slow burner and what's a quick burner? The first thing that's going to happen with the employers is they're going to throw their hands up in horror, and so we've just come through an alleged global financial crisis that Australia missed, but they still will throw their hands up in horror, and many should do that. I mean, many small businesses are struggling. So I think that there's a point there, but that's a slow burner. The fast burner, Angela, I think, is if the grants to apprentices and trainees directly into their bank accounts at milestone points would be a much better way of doing it, tax-free, to actually invest in the training and development in particular areas in apprenticeships and traineeships.
So you're saying that the payments should go directly to the apprentices and trainees or straight to the businesses themselves?
That's a very good question. I think that the corporate sector or large companies, $500 plus, should not get any subsidies from government whatsoever unless they make a really good case that they're in perilous circumstances, like a bank that may be going to the wall, for example, or in the finance sector for admin traineeships. I think small business and medium business should get subsidies, but at this particular point, they may be getting subsidies, but they are still taxed on them if they're for-profit organisations. So the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. So for the small to medium enterprises, I think they should get subsidies, but I think those other subsidies should also be given directly to the apprentices and trainees in their bank accounts as grants.
Mm-hmm.
Now, adult apprenticeships, for example, do get some of that money. They can get around $7,000 or more over a period of time, per annum, ranging from about $5,000 to $7,000, but they still have to pay additional tax on it as well. And an adolescent training program. Over 70% of people are doing apprenticeships and traineeships are aged over 21.
Mm. And so has the training system changed to take account of these older workers?
Oh, I really do worry about the policy advisors in this area and have done for a significant number of years. In my view, this has gone backwards. This is a worse situation than what it was when I was last working in the field. 5 years ago before I moved into academia. But the really disappointing point is it took me about 2 hours to get right up to speed with the latest policies, and there hasn't been significant changes. I think it is going backwards, and I think there needs to be major changes made. I can give you a few examples of some of my thoughts if you wish.
Yeah, do.
Well, I think there needs to be a big picture issue. Again, if I were Minister Evans, I'd say I want a national body akin to a Medibank to put the structures in place to draw this together on a national basis. Education is an issue of infrastructure for the community. We have major skill shortages in mechanics, chefs, electricians, plumbers, etc., fitters and turners, now welders. Without these people, not a lot happens. You know, without a carpenter, nothing is put on top of it as a basic infrastructure. And where it may be 50 to 60% of these people that are completing in those traditional trade areas, it's still wasteful that they're not completing, and particularly when it comes down to money. I mean, I wouldn't mind being a truck driver in a $90,000 plus in the Pilbara in Western Australia. I wouldn't mind getting $250 a day as a labourer, where I might get $350 per week as an apprentice, you know. And of course, a lot of people they have financial commitments and things change, and they need to jump basically to survive. But the system's not keeping up, and there's waste. I don't want to go on too long about this because I'm sure you have other questions, but where we've got 8 states and territories, the money's filtering down from the Commonwealth Government, it filters into bureaucracies, they work on it, they put it into the vet sector to do the training. I think we need to take that step out and all of those people and look at what's really needed around the regions with good advice from the state governments and excellent organisations like the National Centre for Vocational Education and Research. Their research is brilliant, as is our own Commonwealth structure, the ABS, Australian Bureau of Statistics. They're brilliant. They can find out where these skill shortages are and do long-term planning and increase the benefits to the individuals so that we all benefit.
Yes. Dr. Alan Montagu is with us at the moment. He's lecturer in the School of Management at RMIT and previously managed the RMIT's apprenticeship and traineeship programs. Indeed, we've got another guest with us right now, and that is James Fairbank, Alan. James recently completed his Certificate 3 in Commercial Cookery. He joins us. Hello, welcome to
you,
James.
Good morning, Angela. Good morning, Dr. Montague.
Good morning, James.
You started your certificate in your late 30s, I understand, James.
I was 37 when I started my apprenticeship as a chef.
And what were you doing before then?
Oh, I spent 20 years in hospitality, both starting and picking up classes and all the way up to a qualified licensee in pubs and hotels. And other various things. I was part owner of a small business and a stay-at-home dad, so I think I've seen almost every angle of it.
Yes, so you obviously had previous skills, that's for sure. Were they in any way relevant to your chef certificate, and did they change your training in any way?
No, not really. It's not having any formal qualifications that could be recognised prior learning. I didn't really get any additional qualifications as far as my apprenticeship went, but it certainly helped me in the work. Like just the fact of, because I'm a mature age student, work ethic and understanding how workplaces actually do work, and that certainly stood me in better stead when it actually came to the workplace.
Alan, do you think traineeship such as James's should be a little bit more flexible and take into account the previous work, the previous experience he's done?
Well, absolutely. I'm absolutely despairing that recognition for prior learning for a mature age and obviously intelligent person like James wasn't given. I came into a case with a relative of my wife's, for example, who had worked in hospitality and had done cooking in pubs for quite some years. I can tell you honestly that with my intervention, I got her through her total apprenticeship within 2 months with a TAFE college because I knew exactly what to do, and I dictated that. I wish I'd run into James because he was on a lower wage, being trained in areas that he didn't need to be trained in for a considerable time because the recognition of prior learning was not applied, and he would have an abundance of skills and was being trained for the sake of training by self-seeking organisations, so I despair.
J- James, tell me how that training impacted on your lifestyle with a family. Was it hard to manage on your training wage?
Well, I'm in a bit of a lucky position. My wife is in senior management, so her wage really drives the household. As a first year, I was being paid $7.56 an hour.
Oh, my goodness. You could get more than that down at the local fast food place, couldn't you?
You could, which is quite disappointing. But also, we're talking about wages in apprenticeships. Wages vary between awards. I've got a mate who's a fitter and turner down in Wollongong working in the steel mills down there. As a first year, he was being paid almost $18 an hour. As you said, I've recently completed, I early completed my apprenticeship. I did, instead of doing 4 years, I did 3 years and 8 months. At the fourth year, I was only being paid $14, I think it was $14.60. So he as a first year was being paid more than I was as a fourth year. So it does impact on your home life. The hours and also finding a work-life balance kind of makes it a bit hard when you do have to actually go out and earn that dollar.
Yes.
As I said, I was fairly lucky because my wife's wage drives the family. Mine's supplement. But if I was to go out and try and live as a first year on that, I would have struggled seriously.
I can imagine. James, do you know anyone who dropped out of their training?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. From when I started as a first year, there was two people and myself that went through all the way out of the class of 15 that we started. At the end, as I said, there was just two, but all along the way, they people dropped out. It took 4 weeks for the first three to go.
And would that be mainly because of the low pay?
Possibly. No, I won't say possibly, probably. Also, Dr. Montague touched on working conditions. If you're being paid $7 an hour as a first year, and your chef spends half his life screaming at you, it's not conducive to you. It's not a conducive learning environment, and it's certainly not conducive to you actually wishing to give your best in that position.
Yes. And so, Alan, Dr. Montague, tell us briefly what you see as the most critical issue that needs to be urgently addressed here to improve the completion rates for trainees and apprentices. And can you have any input into it?
Well, I did phone the Minister's office the other day, Minister Evans' office, the other day to have a discussion. I'm still waiting for a call back. I will write to him. I actually, I've been around this area for so long in the training, the development, the policy. I've basically got a pretty good grip across it all. I'm actually qualified in education in numerous areas anyway, so I can teach it in many parts and I can put it together. I still would call for a national body to get rid of the intervention of the states. I would still make sure that the industries are getting the right people, the right training. I would boost recognition of prior learning. I'd look at the disabled people situation. The subsidy for disabled people is this year in 2011 is $104.30. I can tell you honestly that in 1996 it was $102. Charles Dickens would have a field day because it's increased by $2 since that period. That figure alone and that symbol alone shows me how far this program hasn't come. You know, since even the Keating time, where it was boosted under Working Nation, was boosted significantly, but it's been a little bit mangled under the Howard years, and I don't see any great changes under the Rudd-Gillard government either. So I think that it really needs a great big picture vision and a robust structure like a Medibank to pull it together nationally so that we can use it as infrastructure. I fail to understand why education is not seen as a key infrastructure area for industry. It does escape me.
Alan, terrific to talk to you. I thank you for joining us on Life Matters today.
Thank you, Angela, and thank you, James, and I hope to hear from you sometime.
Dr. Alan Montague has been our guest. He's a lecturer in the School of Management at RMIT. And thank you, James. Thank you for being on today.
Thank you, Angela.
And
thank you, Dr. Montague.
Good luck in the new gig. He's a newly qualified chef working at Otto in Woolloomooloo. You're tuned to Life Matters with Angela Caterns. Later on, we're going to share some of your letters and calls and responses to some of the stories we've covered and people we've met over the last week or so. But coming up next, how to deal with anger.